Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Mike Huckabee didn't win the Republican presidential nomination, but he didn't exactly lose either. Ran on a shoestring, won in Iowa, carried eight states, hung in longer than anyone but John McCain for a silver medal second place finish. And from the sound of it, he's still in. Talking about how to rebuild the GOP. This hour On Point, we talk with Mike Huckabee. You can join the conversation. Was Huckabee your guy? And what do you think of his message now? Joining me now from Lexington, Kentucky is Mike Huckabee, Southern Baptist minister, former governor of Arkansas. He shook up the 2008 GOP presidential primary race with his unconventional candidacy. Now he's a weekend talk show host for Fox News. He's settling some scores from the campaign trail, and he's out with a new book, Do the Right Thing Inside the Movement That's Bringing Common Sense Back to America. Time magazine calls it a memoir of his campaign, a treatise on the ills of the Republican Party, and a blueprint for his own political future. Governor Huckabee, welcome back to On Point. Good to have you.
Thank you, Tom. Great to be back.
It's great to have you. Would the GOP, would you have won if it was a Huckabee for president in the end instead of McCain?
Oh, isn't it easy to talk about what woulda, coulda, shoulda, but it's hard to say. And fact is, there were a lot of headwinds against the Republican candidate this year, regardless of who it was going to be. I do think that one of the differences might have been the support for the bailout. John McCain went back to Washington and supported it.
Yep.
I think that was a fundamental mistake. But I'm not sure that anyone could have overcome the extraordinary momentum that Barack Obama had really built, particularly in those latter weeks. He just ran a flawless campaign. It's hard to beat that.
What did you learn from your time on the campaign trail? You've done gubernatorial level, Arkansas plenty. This is your big plunge into national politics. What did you come away with what it takes to win the presidency? And I guess the question that comes with that, whatever it takes, are you willing to try it again?
Well, I don't know. It's a little early for that. But let me tell you two things I learned. One was that running for president wasn't nearly as savage as any election I'd ever been involved in Arkansas. I mean, my home state is a place where people play politics like football without pads or helmets, and it's a full contact sport. And, you know, it's played pretty rough, and especially if you're a Republican in Arkansas, because there just haven't been many of us ever get elected. So I was somewhat surprised that it wasn't as difficult in the sense of just day-to-day bloodletting that I was used to from running in Arkansas. That was the first surprise. The other
Rudy Giuliani, not tough enough for you? Maybe it was because you were the smiling
guy. I'm not sure
guy.
Rudy would have survived Arkansas politics.
Really?
I'm telling
boy.
You. It's, you know, it's bare-knuckle stuff.
You're going to hear from him on
personal,
that.
It's very personal, and it's up close and sort of hand-to-hand combat. But it was good preparation to run for president. The other thing that I really took away from the race was what a great country we have. I was renewed in my own appreciation for the genius of the American system and for the essential goodness of the American people. You know, I know, Tom, sometimes people come away from an election and they're cynical, they even are bitter. I was not. I was more of anything saying, golly, there's some terrific stories out there. And my book is really filled with stories of the ordinary people that I think make America work every day.
We read that. We see it. We hear it. We've also read what you've written here. We're going to get to your vision of where the GOP needs to go. But let's settle some of this campaign trail business first. You talk about Mitt Romney with no great affection here. He spent more time on the road to Damascus than a Syrian camel driver, you write. And we thought nobody could fill John Kerry's flip-flops. Why the bad blood between you and Governor Romney?
Well, it's colorful language, but I'm typically known for that. I wouldn't call it so much bad blood, but there's no way I could have told the story of what was going on in the campaign without some candor. The fact is people came to know me during the process as a person who pretty well spoke my mind. Mm-hmm. And there was, I think, a frustration, not just with me, but with John McCain and Rudy Giuliani and all the other Republican candidates, because what we would see was Mitt Romney would take a position and do a gazillion ads about a position he was taking as president that was polar opposite of something that he had either done or said any time up until that moment. And he would attack us on the very things in which he himself had a spotty record. And we were all scratching our heads saying, you know, what is this? How do you go about reinventing yourself in such a grand way? So in order to tell the story of why was there tension, and there was, not just with me, but I think there was greater tension between he and John McCain, probably greater tension between he and Rudy Giuliani. You know, it wasn't personal with me, but it was very frustrating at times that the national media sort of gave him a pass and didn't really challenge as much, you know, in some of the issues where he was taking a very different stand as a presidential candidate than he had any time previously.
You say Fred Thompson never did grasp the dynamics of the race or the country. What was Fred missing? What do we learn from what you believe he may not have seen?
Fred's heart never seemed to be in it. There were very few campaign appearances. I remember in, I guess, late November, he said, I'm going to Iowa. We're going to win it. I'm going to go up there and move in and be there for the duration. And that was in late November. Then we saw him again, I think, for one appearance on December the 8th. And then he came back after the first of the year for a couple. My point is that it just never seemed that Fred was just really wanting to be president. It was like, if you guys want me and you call me up and you hand me the job, you know what, I'll probably do it. But if you want to run for president, you have to be completely consumed by a schedule that is really beyond human capacity. Some people complain about that and say, well, gee, you shouldn't have to work that hard. I disagree, because if you become president, your life is going to be consumed with the business at hand. So if you can't keep that schedule to acquire the job, you probably couldn't keep that schedule if you had the job.
And, Governor, you're frank in Do the Right Thing about your disappointment with evangelical leaders in not swinging in earlier, harder, more widely behind you. You name Gary Bauer and Pat Robertson and Dr. Bob Jones III. You say, I lamented that so many people of faith had moved from being prophetic voices saying, thou art the man, to being voices of patronage and saying to those in power, you the man. What happened there?
Well, a lot of it was that for the early part of evangelical involvement in political activity dating back to the 1980 campaign with Ronald Reagan, there were people who were involved not because they loved politics, but because they were deeply committed to certain principles of traditional family, of the sanctity of life. And so that's what motivated them. And their approach was, these are our issues. We don't care whether you're Democrat or Republican, but we care about these issues very deeply. And if you're with us, we're with you. If you're against these issues, we're against you. Sort of like the NRA, sort of like Greenpeace. Mm. Most political organizations that are issue-based have a fundamental focus, and the support or lack thereof is directly proportionate to whether or not you're with them on those issues. And that's the way it had been for a long time in the let's call it the value voter movement, because it's really broader than just evangelicals. It includes Roman Catholics and a host of people who have traditional values as their heart.
And then here you came and you were with them on those issues, but
well,
they weren't.
It's like I told them, I said, I didn't come to you, I come from you. You know, I was birthed out of that movement, if you will. Mm. Now, I was also a fiscal conservative and still am, and I'd governed 10 and a half years. Mm. I was the person on the stage, with the exception of Tommy Thompson, who in either party, Democrat or Republican, actually had more experience governing than anybody else running for president, anybody. And so I'd been an effective governor. I dealt with everything from the rebuilding of an infrastructure to energy policy, education and health care. Even named by Time Magazine as one of the five best governors in the country because of health care and education policies and reforms. So there were a host of things about which I felt that I'd sort of earned the right to have some credibility. It was an interesting thing, though. When I got with some of these leaders, it was more about, well, we're going to support the guy we think's going to win. Well, that's when it becomes about process and not the principles. And that'd be like the NRA saying, well, we really care about your position on the Second Amendment, but we're also real interested in what you're going to do about global warming. Well, when, let's say, NARAL says we care about reproductive rights, but we also want to know your position, you know, on statehood for Puerto Rico, then it dilutes their message and they don't have the same strength. And that was the point that I was making in the book. But, Tom, as you know from reading it, it's really not so much a look back. It's a look ahead. I'd say it's proportionate to the rearview mirror in a car. and a windshield in the car. Most of this book is talking about how do we restructure the conservative movement of the Republican Party. The context of it is the campaign and some of the reasons that the conservative movement really found itself in the ditch and has really lost extraordinary amounts of elections over the past two cycles.
You say you want to hit the reset button on the Republican Party. What do you want to wash away?
Well, not so much wash away, but to get it rebooted, I think, is the best way to put it. And if we look back historically from 1976, Republicans win elections when they hold to a clarity about their convictions. And they're very certain as to saying we want to lower taxes, not raise them. We think moms and dads raise better kids than governments. We want strong national security. We believe in the sanctity of life. We're for the Second Amendment. We think government ought to be more local, less federal. When we go through those bedrock fundamental principles of the classic Republican Party, we win elections. It's when we deviate from those and sort of move to the mushy middle and become unclear, and in the case of the last two election cycles, when frankly the Republicans were seen as incompetent, we didn't police corruption, we didn't govern very effectively, moments like Katrina are a great example, then you see things that Republicans are totally supposed to be against, like these government bailouts. We're supposed to be the party that says it's the free market system that's supposed to function.
Even if it's going down?
What's that?
Even if it's going down in flames?
Well, it certainly hasn't helped it, but the bailouts, we do the bailouts and the stock market continues to crash. We throw billions of dollars at these industries. And who would invest in a company if you think that the government is about to nationalize it? It's like asking somebody to put money in oil fields in Venezuela, knowing that Hugo Chavez is about to nationalize them.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with former Arkansas governor, number two in the 08 Republican primaries, now Fox News talk show host, out with a new book, Mike Huckabee. The book is Do the Right Thing, Inside the Movement That's Bringing Common Sense Back to America. He joins us from Lexington, Kentucky. He's been all over the country lately with his book. Governor Huckabee, lots of people want to speak with you. Let's go to Aiken, South Carolina. Miranda, you're on the air with Mike Huckabee.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask Mr. Huckabee, how do you propose to recenter the Republican Party? I'm concerned about this right-wing extremist sort of movement we have going in the United States. I am a registered Republican, but I feel alienated from the party because I'm a bright, I'm not a fundamental Christian. And while I do believe in fiscal responsibility and small government, I'm for total human rights. I really believe that all men are created equal. And I don't think it should matter what color, creed, or sexual orientation you are to take advantage of those rights in the United States.
Miranda, stick with us. Governor Huckabee, what do you say?
Well, Miranda, I hope you'll read the book, especially the chapter called What About Created Equal Do You Not Understand? I think that there is a very important part of the Republican Party that we've got to recognize that our agenda's got to include dealing with such things as poverty, disease, and hunger. I talked about those things in the course of the campaign. A lot of people said those aren't Republican issues. I said, of course they're Republican issues. Any issue that empowers people ought to be Republican because we're about strengthening and empowering the individual as opposed to empowering the state. That is a historic Republican position. I don't think it's necessary that a person is a fundamentalist Christian or an evangelical Christian or a Christian at all to be a Republican. What I do think is important, and the theme of the book is that you cannot separate the character of a citizenry and the cost of their government. And when I was a governor for 10 and a half years, it became very obvious that the cost of government and the size of government was directly proportionate to the way in which people were willing to do their own governing. In other words, the best government of all, which is the name of one of the chapters, is when we govern ourselves. In an ideal world, we would govern ourselves so we don't need a lot of other people telling us what to do and how to do it and where to do it.
But if Miranda feels the GOP is too far to the religious right, yet she's a registered Republican but feels alienated, how do you bring her back, Governor Huckabee?
Well, I think it's, again, clarity on all the issues. Now, is every Republican going to agree on everything? Nope, no more than the Democrats do. But the fact is that I hear people like Kathleen Parker, who wrote a column in a week or so ago saying that the GOP's problem was GOD. We need to get rid of all the religious people. Well, let's just see what happens if all the people who are people of faith were to disappear from the GOP. I tell you what, you lose your infantry, your foot soldiers who do the phone calling and the ones who go up and down the streets passing out literature and stand at rallies for long periods of time screaming for candidates. There are a lot of people that came to the Republican Party because the Republicans had clarity and have had in its platform on the sanctity of human life, on the importance of the structure of the family, as well as on low taxes and limited government and more local government. That's sort of the whole package of the Republican Party, and including with that national security. If we start saying that an entire section of that party, the people who do believe in issues like life, are no longer welcome, then I will predict for you the Republican Party will be very soon a party of angry old white guys sitting around the country club puffing cigars and being about as important as the Whig Party is today.
Miranda, is Mike Huckabee bringing you back with that perspective or not?
It's not that I deny the fact that the religious people in the party are a strong part of the party. I just feel like their voice has been more equal lately than other voices. And it's not that I'd want to disinclude anyone, you know, but I do think that they've been more equal. Everybody needs to be heard a little better.
Some more equal than others. Miranda, we got it, and thank you very much. Let's get one from Chesapeake, Virginia. Joe, you're on the air with Mike Huckabee.
Hi, Tom. First time calling, long-term listener.
Great to have you.
I need to ask Governor Huckabee a question. Does he feel or believe that bombing or shooting up abortion clinics is terrorism? Sarah Palin refused to say yes or no on that. I'd like to have his opinion. I'll take it off the air.
Governor Huckabee?
I think it's absolutely terrorism. It's murder. It's cold-blooded, calculated murder. Call it anything you want to, but it's despicable. Inexplicable and indefensible behavior. No person who is truly pro-life would ever condone or even accept the place for such activity. That is absolutely, to me, an abominable opposition to everything that I hold dear as a pro-life person. If I'm really pro-life, that doesn't mean I just care about life in the gestation period. And I talk about this extensively in the book I mentioned previously to Miranda, and I think you'd find it very fascinating that a true pro-life position is just as interested in the life of an 80-year-old woman in hospice care as the life of the eighth-month unborn child in the mother's womb. It's about life. It's about the sacredness and intrinsic worth and value of every human being and the basic fundamental understanding that no person owns another person. No person has a right to devalue the intrinsic worth and life of another person.
Governor Huckabee, what about the Palin choice by John McCain? Our caller Joe raises it. I've seen you quoted saying that after that choice, you said, I was scratching my head saying, hey, wait a minute, she's wonderful, but the only difference was she looks better in stilettos than I do and has better hair. They suddenly decided that everything they disliked about me was okay. She was given a pass by some of the very people who said I wasn't prepared. Why not McCain-Huckabee rather than McCain-Palin? Why do you think it went that way?
Well, she does look better in stilettos and has better hair, no doubt about it. Of course, right now, most everybody has better hair than me as I'm losing most of mine.
Hey.
You know, I think that remark got a lot of play. Unfortunately, the context didn't. I was in a room full of reporters in Washington, and somebody was saying, Governor, many of the positions that you hold were similar to hers, and why didn't you get the nod? And so I said it, smile on my face, and the whole room broke up in laughter because they knew that I was saying it as a point of jest. You know, the whole point is, yeah, there were people who snubbed me because I said things that were called populist and middle class. And then she comes along and says many of those same things. And so the question was, how come they loved her for saying what they hated you for saying? And that's when I made the remark. The room, you know, all understood that it was said with tongue in cheek, and they laughed. Then later it comes out in print, and people said Huckabee's bitter that he didn't get the nomination. Heck no, I wasn't bitter about it. Sarah Palin brought an energy to the party. She energized a lot of people. She's a wonderful person. I know her and think the world of her. So it was not any way diminishing Sarah Palin. It was really diminishing my ugliness of hair and my pathetic walk in stilettos.
And yet, you know, the best humor has a grain of truth in it, and there seems to me to be a real question around. If it was the religious right that they needed to strengthen themselves with, why not Mike Huckabee? You had been out on the campaign trail. You had proven yourself in caucus after caucus. You know, what was it? How do you read that?
It's one of those things I don't fully understand. I mean, I think that in some cases there were those who really were sort of looking at the process early on, and when I did better than they thought I was going to do, quite frankly, I think some of them needed to justify, well, we didn't support him because X. Because originally the reason was, you're a great guy. We sure love what you stand for, but you don't have enough money. You can't possibly win.
Right.
And, you know, one of the frustrations that I have with the current presidential process is that the press deals mostly with process questions early on. And for the first several months, nobody asked, what's your position on rebuilding the infrastructure of our highways over taxed sewers and water systems? How do you address education? What would you change about foreign policy? The only questions I got was, how much money have you raised? How many field staff do you have in New Hampshire? How many people have you hired in South Carolina? And frankly, that doesn't necessarily tell you whether I'm going to be a good president. It may tell you that I've got a big checking account. I wrote a check, got myself started. Or I come from a place where I accumulated a lot of donors and I've been raising money. But I think people ought to be elected president because they raise the prospects of this country getting better. And there's a chapter in my book called Let's Get Vertical, where I talk about vertical politics that I think a lot of politicians and the pundits focus on horizontals, left, right, liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican. We need to be focusing on vertical things. Are our borders safer? Are our neighborhoods more secure? Are kids' graduation rates going up? Are per capita income going? Is the per capita income of the average worker going up? Those are vertical issues, and that's what I think people care about a whole lot more than the horizontal.
Mike Huckabee's new book is Do the Right Thing. Let's get a call from Salt Lake City. And Jim, you're on the air with Governor Huckabee.
I love the show.
Thank you, sir.
Governor, I should be a Republican, and I should be a Huckabee supporter. I listen to you. I like what you say. I'm for national security. I'm for less government. I love fiscal responsibility. But I am gay, and I've been in a relationship for 22 years with my partner. We are just like everybody else in the neighborhood, but you evangelicals simply can't get over that issue. And just let me live my life and let me have my relationship and let the legal benefits flow. Why can't you guys just get over this so you can embrace a lot of us who have the same values and same ideas as Republicans have, but you're all so hung up on my relationship?
Jim, you lay it right out. What do you say, Mike?
Well, I'm not at all hung up on the relationship that Jim has. I think every person is completely free to live his or her life as one chooses. And I have no problems with a person living as they wish. Now, here's where I would say the line is drawn, is when you want to redefine an institution like marriage. That's the only issue at which I think we would part company. If you want to find a way to have whether it's benefits, hospitalization, visitation, you know, I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with somebody redefining the institution of marriage, making marriage mean something that it is historically and always meant, which is a male and a female in a relationship that not only creates the next generation but trains that next generation to become their replacements. And, you know, I think sometimes there's a lot of misunderstanding about what those issues are, and that we're homophobic. I'm not, but I do believe in wanting to preserve the tradition and the definition of marriage.
Jim, good enough? Close to good enough? Does it bring you around to Mike Huckabee?
Why is it that Republicans fight hate crime legislation? Why is it that they fight domestic partnerships? Why is it that issue after issue they say, oh, I'm all for this, but when it comes to civil unions, you guys can never go in there and put into action what you say. All right, forget about marriage. Take it off the table, and let's get even one or two senators or governors to say, you know what? I'm for domestic partnerships. Darn right, besides Governor Schwarzenegger, I might add.
Mm-hmm.
Then we would believe you. But it doesn't. It seems like you're rational and reasonable and say, okay, I'm for everything but marriage. But every time anything specific comes up, you're all against it.
Governor Huckabee, you've got a skeptic there in Salt Lake still.
Well, I didn't expect to win him over in a minute and a half. But, Jim, one thing I would point out is that many times when people have pushed for civil unions, they say that's what we want. And as soon as they get it, then they want more. They want marriage. And that's what we have seen in virtually every state. 30 states have had marriage amendments on the ballot. All 30 states have passed those amendments to affirm traditional marriage. It was under Bill Clinton that the Defense of Marriage Act was passed. People like Joe Biden, hardly a right-wing conservative, voted for that. So this isn't an issue that's all about right-wing Republicans. Democrats historically believe it. California is hardly a Republican state. California affirmed marriage with Proposition 8. But here's what I would also point out, that the hate crime issue is not about same-sex relationships for me. I think for many people, it's not the biggest issue in the world, and I could probably live with some of the things. But the problem is that when you say that a crime is a crime, but the thought behind it made it an even worse crime, the fundamental question you have to raise is, are you punishing people at that point for their thoughts? I think the fact that you strike somebody and violently attack them is what you should consequence in the criminal justice system. And if an 80-year-old woman is mugged on her way into her house with a sack of groceries, the thought behind the criminal's intent is not as important as the fact that he whacked a perfectly innocent person. We don't punish what he was thinking. We punished what he did. I'm a little concerned about getting to this place in our culture where we start punishing people for what they're thinking. When the government decides what I can think and what I can't, I think the government stepped a little too far.
Jim, there's a lot to chew on there. Let's get one more call here from Nashville, Tennessee. Gary, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. It's an honor to talk to you, Governor. I am one of the many liberal to progressive Democrats you might have heard about who found you attractive and likable in the primary campaign. I have my own ideas about why that was, but why do you think that was the case?
Interesting. Mike Huckabee?
Well, Gary, I first of all appreciate that that you kept an open mind, and I think that that's what I've proven. I have clarity in my convictions. No one who's listened even to this short broadcast today can say, well, I stepped around every issue, never took a stand. But I don't do it with anger. I'm not mad at anybody, and that's what I often said. I'm a conservative, but I'm not mad about it. On my television show, if people watch, they'll see me interview people like Richard Dreyfuss and Bill Maher and Oliver Stone. What you don't see is me interrupting their every sentence and yelling and screaming and seeing if I can get louder than they're getting, because I truly find that it's fascinating to have an adult conversation with people who are my polar opposites. I don't learn a lot if I sit in a room with people who think just like I do. I really get traction from having the conversations with people who are totally unlike me, and I enjoy that. And I find that if I can't handle that, in other words, if I put my views forth and somebody has different views and they come at me with all they've got, if I fold up like a cheap paper cup, it's not the attacker that has the problem. It's obvious my own views don't hold up very well. I think I can intellectually defend what I believe. I've thought through it. You may not agree with it, but I understand it and can honestly live with the consequences of it. And I think that is what people who are what I would call intellectually honest with themselves, they may be 180 degrees from me, but they can live with it if they know that we can still have this conversation in a what I'd call a civil manner. And as I said on my television show, I take the words guest and host quite seriously. I'm a host. I want to treat people as they were my guest. And I would never bring a guest into my home and yell at them and scream at them and cut them off at every sentence and argue with them for everything they said. I wouldn't treat someone like that on my show either.
Gary in Nashville, thanks for calling. Governor, you know, at a lot of Sarah Palin rallies, we saw a lot of anger. We just got half a minute here, but what was that about? And if you were to run again, how is that just part of the picture?
It shouldn't be part of the picture. We shouldn't be known for what we're against. We ought to be known for what we're for. And I tried to build a campaign. And in fact, if people read my book, they're going to see that this is not a book angrily talking about what went wrong. It's a book of saying, look, there's some great things going on in America and some great people behind them. That's what I hope will come across in Do the Right Thing.
Mike Huckabee's new book is Do the Right Thing, Inside the Movement That's Bringing Common Sense Back to America. He joined us today from Lexington, Kentucky. He's on book tour there. Governor Huckabee, thanks very much for being with us. Thanks for taking the time.
It's been a pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
When we come back, we'll look at how the GOP awaits President-elect Barack Obama. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We've been talking this hour with Governor Mike Huckabee. We've had him for most of our time together here, but he's off on the great highway of life, and we're still thinking about Mike Huckabee, what we've heard from him today, and also about the GOP as it looks forward to the Obama years right in front of us. Joining us to do a little bit of that from Washington, D.C., we're joined by Gail Chadwick, a congressional reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. It's always great to have her with us. Gail, thanks for being here today.
Hi, Tom.
And from Washington, we're joined by David Winston, Republican pollster and strategist, currently advising Minority Leader John Boehner and other congressional GOP leaders. David Winston, thank you very much for being here.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me back on.
David, first on Mike Huckabee. We just talked with him for the greater part of the show here. He's clearly still got his irons in the fire, a new book out, and aspirations that sure sound like they head right on towards 2012. But I'm looking at the latest poll here, and Lord knows, here we are years ahead of the vote. Nevertheless, it's interesting. Sarah Palin, 24% of Republicans putting their hand up for her. Mitt Romney, 18%. Bobby Jindal, 15%. Mike Huckabee, still down at 9.7%. Why doesn't Mike Huckabee, he's a likable guy, affable guy, moderate-sounding guy, why doesn't he rise higher in those GOP numbers?
Well, I think there are two elements that are going on right now. First off, a lot of that is name ID driven, so you would expect somebody like Sarah Palin to be doing particularly well because she just came off of a national campaign.
Sure, but he was no wallflower the last 9 months.
Oh, no, I know, absolutely. But but there's another element here, and that is because you haven't actually engaged in the campaign and the contrasts aren't seen, people are sort of assuming what they believe, and that'll change as everybody begins to engage. I mean, the fact is, look, for Huckabee, 9 points, that's a lot better than where he started last time around.
We'll talk about Mike, but Gail, give us a sense also here. You know, Barack Obama is on stage in Chicago every other day now, bringing out his crew of cabinet members, lots of anticipation. Obama pretty nearly overshadowing the sitting president in these weeks leading up to his own inauguration. You're watching Congress and listening to Republicans thinking about all this and getting ready for the beginning of a new term, which will have a different profile in Congress and certainly a different profile in the White House. What's the tone that you're hearing out of the GOP in Washington, Gail, and in Congress in particular? Are they getting ready to hold hands with Barack Obama and do something bipartisan? Are they getting ready for trench warfare? What's in the works?
Well, it's hard to answer that because the beginning of every new Congress, everyone talks bipartisan. So
yeah.
You have to sort out the usual from what is unusual. But I think what is overwhelming this transition is the daily reports coming out of the stock market, coming out of, you know, on Friday we'll see new unemployment numbers. I think members on both sides of the aisle, and especially Republicans, realize that if they come back looking like business as usual, fighting bipartisan partisan gridlock, petty bickering, and so forth, it will be very, very bad. So I think you've got Republicans across the board. Sarah Palin at the Governors Association had this comment about wishing Barack Obama well. She said, if he governs with the skill and the grace and the greatness of which he is capable, we're going to be just fine. I mean, that kind of, you know, welcoming to the new president, hoping he does well, that is what you're going to hear on all sides.
David Winston, how about it? Are we going to hear Republicans talking about Barack Obama's skill, grace, and greatness as we head into the new year or something else? What do you expect as he comes in with, you know, with an agenda that's not entirely clear yet and a cabinet that's reached out in some non-traditional directions, including Robert Gates, George W. Bush's defense secretary now?
Well, I think certainly some of his cabinet appointments have been pleasantly surprising, Bob Gates being the obvious example. And so I think some of the initial concern that there would be a hard left cabinet has not come to fruition. Now, as you raise the point, what is the foreign policy, given what Obama didn't send in the campaign versus some of these appointments? And we'll see how that evolves over time. But the Republican Party has a much larger problem at this point, more so than Obama, and that is they just came off two huge defeats.
Yep.
I mean, these are not small. These are significant. And the problem the party needs to think about is it's got to figure out how it takes these principles that it has and makes them applicable today, basically modernize the party. To some degree, as much of a fan of Ronald Reagan as I was, and He was terrific in the 80s, but this is a different age, and the party's got to figure it out how to modernize itself so that it can have an agenda that appeals to both Mike Huckabee and the woman from South Carolina who was on the phone as well, and keeps them in the party. And that's the challenge at this point. How do you create that sort of modern agenda to do that? That's likely to be more of their focus at this point than trying to figure out exactly how do they oppose Barack Obama. It's what are they going to be for?
You heard Mike Huckabee just now, and of course he's been out there talking for a while. Do you see him as part of a modernizing movement for the Republican Party, or is he affability wrapped around some pretty old and maybe divisive Republican characteristics?
One of the challenges that he faces is he clearly comes at, there are three basic elements to the Republican Party. There's sort of foreign affairs conservatives, economic conservatives, and the social conservatives. He clearly is coming from the social conservative element of that. His challenge is how does he grow outside that group? And certainly during the primary, he didn't. And I think some of his affability certainly helps him, but he's going to have to figure out how to reach beyond that. That's really the challenge of the party, is what happened over the past two election cycles is the majority coalition that Reagan built and then Newt Gingrich sort of sustained just really fell apart. I mean, in key center-right groups like Catholics, married women with children, middle income, and now looking at the future, younger voters as well. The challenge in front of the Republican Party is pretty staggering.
David Gale, we've got a lot of listeners who want to join us. Let's go to Christopher in Boston. Hi, Christopher. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Great to speak with you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think I consider myself a middle-right person. And I think the thing that has disappointed me so much about the Republicans is that I feel like over the last 8 years they've continually moved along to this almost exclusive spectrum to the point of kicking out alternative ideas, and I think that that's been the real detriment to them lately. And I think to the point where they've camped out healthy debate. I'm wondering, do your guests have any perspective on whether they think that that will change over the years to come?
Did you go with McCain, Palin, Christopher? You say you're a center-right guy. Did you cast your vote there?
You know, I did not. I think that the pick of Palin, to me, I really began to question the judgment of the leaders in the Republican Party. I didn't see many redeeming qualities in her as a leader at all.
And what about Mike Huckabee? What you heard on the campaign trail from Huckabee, what you heard today, is he the kind of GOP leader who could win your support?
I like him very much as a person, but I still feel like he's a little bit too far along in this exclusive portion of the spectrum. I think they had 8 years to be to set an example, and I think the folks who are in the lead have the responsibility to encourage debate, and they have kind of quashed that, and I'm hoping that that can perhaps come as a resurgence, maybe as a result of the losses that they've experienced.
Christopher, thanks for calling. David Winston, how does the GOP win its numbers back? I mean, as you say, two very big defeats right on top of it here. And when you look at what happened at the polls, there's so many important groups that they just weren't winning in and weren't even pulling from some of their base groups as they have in the past. Where does the Republican Party go for fresh numbers now?
Well, the one positive that still exists is this is still a center-right country. And what that means is when you take a look at the sort of ideological distribution based on the exit polls, 34% of the country is conservative, 22% is liberal, and that margin makes the country center-right. Having said that, when the campaign very specifically says that this campaign is not going to be about issues, and they just are relentlessly negative and say it's all about defining Obama, the ability of the party to even have a conversation with the electorate doesn't exist. And so the first thing the party's got to do is learn how to sort of re-engage that center-right group talking about ideas and issues. The other element is, as the gentleman was just identifying, is it's got to figure out some way to reach out to voters and try to pull people together in terms of disparate wings of the party. That's the challenge the Democrats are about to face. You've got people like Heath Shuler to Barney Frank in terms of the Democratic caucus, two sort of extremes. The challenge to the Democratic leadership is how do you keep an agenda to keep them engaged? Republicans have to do the same thing to figure out how, in order to get back a majority coalition, do you create an agenda that engages a broad variety of people?
Gail, I'm wondering who those are. Let me put some numbers out here from the vote in November, the presidential vote. Barack Obama won, for example, college graduates by 2 points. George Bush had won those by 6 points 4 years ago. That's an 8-point swing there. Obama won voters with postgraduate degrees by 18 points. Not that that's the sun and the moon, but it's just another important group. Obama won voters with household income above $200,000 by a substantial margin. McCain did best among uneducated voters in Appalachia and the South. Now, there's many kinds of Americans. You can win on many parts of the pyramid, but I'm looking at David Frum, who was in the Bush White House, says, you know, the question for the GOP is who will they go after? Will they go after the college-educated Americans, for example? There are more of them all the time. And he writes, to do so will involve painful change on issues ranging from the environment to abortion, and it will involve potentially even more painful changes of style and tone toward a future that's less overtly religious, less negligent with policy, less polarizing on social issues. Is that kind of conversation going on Capitol Hill, Gail? Do you hear Republicans, you know, talking out loud about who they bring in and how they may have to change policy, style, and tone all to do it?
You know, Tom, there's almost a bifurcated discussion going on here. On the congressional side, you have a lot of this talk of, you know, how do we pull together again? How do we expand our base? How do we get a different message? We're going to wait. They don't say this publicly, but their sense is, give Barack Obama some months. See what happens. Don't look like you're putting a cog in the wheel. Mm. See what happens. If the bailouts go south, if we give, as we have to the Wall Street banks, billions of dollars, and yet we don't see results, then we don't bail out the auto industry and the auto companies start failing, then we can strike back. If he overreaches, we can strike back. But the more interesting debate, to my mind, is what's going on among governors. Because the governors are having, from the ground up, to demonstrate that conservative ideas have any relationship to the kind of a crisis the country is going into. I look at someone like Bobby Jindal in Louisiana, who has cut spending in Louisiana by 12%, claims that this is all waste, that in fact government can function, that what people want is more accountability in their school system. They want a healthcare system that isn't government-run or triage, that's market-based. Mm-hmm. He's experimenting with that. It's the governors, I think, that are at this point the most fertile ground for a new Republican Party, because they have to demonstrate that their ideas actually work on the ground. In Congress, Republicans are going to have nothing to say about anything practical for at least 2 years, and most likely four.
David Winston, how about it? There's a lot of talk about pragmatism in Obama circles. Is the Republican Party, is there still a kind of a mainstream Republican Party that wants to be pragmatic, maybe less ideological than during the Bush years, that's just waiting to come into its own? Do you feel it? And do you see leaders for that out there? Would Mike Huckabee one of them or not?
Yeah, pragmatic is not necessarily the I would suggest the right word at this point. I mean, part of what's needed is leadership that understands how to effectively govern. And govern means that you can't govern with your base. Neither party can govern with their base. So how do you effectively put together a coalition to move in the direction that generally the principles of your party stands for? What you've seen is in 2006, the Republican Party didn't get anything done and they got fired. They in fact were not governing and the public fired them. And I think the dynamic here is How does this present leadership, whoever that may consist of, sort of modernize this party? Now, as she was saying before, that you see some of that at the governor's level, but this is going to have to be broader. This can't be just from one element or one type of office holder. This is going to have to be broad-based across the party. This isn't like after losing in 1992, where there were some basic ideas that everybody saw, and when Republicans lost to Clinton in 92, there were some basic ideas that people saw, and so you could gather around it. This is really rethinking what principles mean and how you apply them to a modern day and what policies come out of that. It's a much broader dynamic.
You've worked with Newt Gingrich in your time. So with that in mind, I mean, do you see Mike Huckabee as part of that future, as central to that future, or do you see him as a fluke of 08?
Now, he'll be a part of the conversation. I think part of it is because his particular approach allows him to talk to a broad variety of people. People may not agree with him, but he'll be a part of that. And you'll see Newt a part of that. Certainly folks like John Boehner.
But is it more than tone with Huckabee? I mean, I've got callers I don't have time to get to here, gay callers saying, that, you know, hey, we're offended by the way he blows off gay issues, their perception. I mean, at the heart, he's a very affable and appealing guy. But is it the heart of a new message there, or
and that's his, and Tom, you're getting right at the core of what he is. He's been a social conservative. The question is, can he develop the way he discusses issues in such a way that allows him to get beyond that particular group? He was unable to do that in this last primary. He's obviously learned some lessons at this point, and the question is, and it is a key question for him, can he go beyond just that particular constituency to begin to build this sort of broader majority coalition?
And Gail, we've just cut you half a minute, but did you say 2 years until the Republicans in Congress start to throw some sand in the Obama gears? Did I really hear you say that? Want to be about?
Oh, I said they'll have nothing. They won't have anything to say about practical issues for 2 years. But no, they're not going to wait 2 years to start throwing sand. The buckets are ready.
The fire brigade is ready. Oh.
But Tom, if I may, and this is what Boehner was focusing on in terms of running for leader again. Mm-hmm. Republicans were able to win the energy debate last summer, and the question is, can Republicans figure out to continue those sort of wins as opposed to just being purely negative all the time?
Yeah, and we'll see very, very soon. Our thanks to Mike Huckabee for joining us earlier in the hour. David Winston joining us today from Washington. David, thanks so much for being
Pleasure.
Here. And Gail Chadwick with the Christian Science Monitor. Gail, it's always wonderful to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.